KNOM Update News. I'm Lorelai Kinnean, and it's 9:02. The annual Alaska Forum on the Environment is underway at the Tenaya Convention Center in Anchorage. Yesterday, federal project managers gave updates on cleanup projects across the state with the national parks, on federal aviation property, and at defense sites. The Defense Department has 537 formerly used defense sites, or FUDs. Of those, 70 remain active for cleanup. Ken Andrashko is the Alaska Region Army Corps of Engineers Chief of the FUDs program here. He says two sites in Alaska are currently getting the most funding, the Northeast Cape on St. Lawrence Island and the Umiat area near the Colville River in the National Petroleum Reserve. He says this year's ongoing PCB cleanup on Test Well 9 at Umiat is getting underway. The Corps' contractors can only work on the tundra for 2 to 3 months during the winter season at Umiat. Andrashko says the Navy used PCBs in drilling muds in the 1940s to learn more about where the oil was.
They wanted to see if they would work as a tracer for finding oil during the exploration back in the 40s.
And old transformers contain PCBs. Andrashko says cleanup efforts at Northeast Cape on St. Lawrence Island is going well.
The PCBs that have been out there, we finally got all those finished up last year. The majority of the petroleum is out. I think we got at least one more good year this year to do the very active remediation with the big excavators taking out dirt. And then we're going to install a whole slew of monitoring wells to kind of monitor how well the remediation's been going.
Andrashko says federal funding has been steady despite cutbacks in some areas. He says Congress boosted funds nationally for FUDs cleanup last year by $50 million. And Bill Huebner with the National Park Service says most sites within national parks are smaller fuel contamination cleanups. And the FAA also deals with cleanups at airports across the state and some PCB problems from old transformers. On Tuesday, House Representative Peggy Wilson of Wrangell presented the House Finance Committee with a comprehensive plan to overhaul the way Alaska pays for transportation infrastructure. It would reestablish a dedicated fund for construction and maintenance paid for by new revenue streams. Wilson insists Alaska needs to begin relying more and more on state money to deal with the $20 billion backlog of projects and repairs.
We need to depend less on the federal government and start taking responsibility for Alaska's roads, harbors, airports, and railroads ourselves. We need to plan for the future, and right now that's not happening.
Wilson's proposal involves three separate but interrelated legislative measures to handle everything from southeastern ferries to the airstrip you rely on and all the roads in between. Almost all of the legislators, officials, and public representatives who spoke during the two-hour session were from communities on the road system. Speaking to the committee by phone from Anchorage, Christine Klein says that Jalista supports the bill because it will more effectively fund airports serving the YK region.
I would like to express support in our region, which has 56 small villages that are primarily airport accessed, is in that this would be helpful to us because we cannot even get projects on the Alaska STIP any longer. There is such a backlog at the Department of Transportation, they're no longer opening it to new projects.
Otherwise, few issues important to rural communities were addressed during the session. Many of the testimonies came from business and development advocates emphasizing economic imperative. John McKinnon, executive director of the Associated General Contractors, says the bills are important investments in Alaska's future.
Because of Alaska's size and limited transportation options, meeting the needs for the future will require a strategy, and this is a strategy. This is planning ahead, and it's not to the point of crisis management yet, but it will be soon. I don't know when. I can't predict when we will start falling more and more off the federal funding cliff, but the trend is in that direction.
A recurrent theme in Representative Wilson's presentation was that expanded transportation infrastructure will bring better access to natural resources. Wilson also explained that state dollars tend to go further, and because they come with less regulatory stipulations, projects are completed more quickly. And on Tuesday, there were two hearings in the legislature regarding village public safety officers around the state. In the House, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee passed House Bill 199, a proposal to support and fund training of up to 20 qualified VPSOs a year to carry firearms. The next stop for the measure is in front of the Finance Committee. Later in the day, the Senate Subcommittee on Public Safety got an update on the overall status of the VPSO program. Commander Captain Steve Arlo oversees the program and for most of the hour presented Senate members with information on recruitment issues, annual turnover rates above 30%, and initiatives to foster healthy relationships between VPSOs and the communities they work with. Arlo said one of the big issues contributing to low retention is public safety work within communities being eclipsed by responding to crime.
Where we have continuity and longevity is in areas where I was talking about earlier, where you have good community support, marginal criminal activity. The VPSOs are able to do all those other things that complement this program. And where we see this disparity is in those areas that have huge crime rates. These VPSOs are doing nothing but criminal activity. They're burning themselves out.
The VPSO program's annual budget is just more than $16.5 million, nearly triple what it was 6 years ago since receiving strong support in the state Senate. Right now, there are 88 VPSOs across the state. Arlo told the committee that the program's longevity and efficacy going forward depends on working with the youth in rural communities. And the longest, toughest snow machine race in the world may prove to be just that this year. Iron Dog Executive Director Kevin Kastner says the Iron Dog Board of Directors, race marshals, and staff met Tuesday evening and reviewed trail conditions and input from racers.
And the decision was made to move forward as planned, so there's no deviations, no changes to the course. We still plan to come to Nome and be there for all of our activities. And we may see a few less people make it there, but we think that it's doable and safe. It's just going to be a rough ride.
While Western Alaska has had a lack of snow, Kastner says the main challenge areas will be going in and out of Roan. Between Roan and Nikolai, there are areas where there is no snow at all.
On either side of that, leaving from the start, it's not too bad. It's icy, but there's some snow and it's doable. The river, we believe, is definitely doable, the Yukon. I know that there's about 4 inches of snow in Koyuk and maybe, you know, a couple inches in the White Mountain area, and I know it's pretty thin in Nome, but based on a lot of the local experience, we rely on the folks in Nome that are familiar with the race and have a lot of history. They say it's doable. It's not going to be fun, but it is passable.
Kastner says they've gotten reports that currently the trail from Unalakleet to Nome is extremely rough.
You know, fair amount of just ice and driftwood and whatever else they may encounter. So it's going to be a little slower going and definitely rough on the riders and the machines.
The mission of the Iron Dog race is to provide reliable, consistent, safe, and honorable cross-country snow machine racing while promoting and educating the public about snow machine and winter safety. Kastner says their decision to continue as planned came from their mission.
The key indicator and one of the things that always comes to the decision is, you know, who are we and what are we about? We certainly don't want to put anyone in harm's way, but at the same time, this is the toughest race, and as such, this will be one of those years that you have to prove how tough you are.
The Iron Dog Snow Machine race will start Sunday, February 16th in Big Lake. This year, Nome's Mike Morgan pairs up with two-time champion Chris Olds. Two-time champion Tyler Huntington will race with four-time champion Todd Palin. And 2009 champions Nick Olstad and Todd Minnick return, along with back-to-back reigning champions Dusty Van Meter and Mark McKenna. 38 teams have entered the 2014 Iron Dog Snow Machine race. And as always, KNOM will provide full coverage of the race, known as the longest, toughest snow machine race in the world. The price of gold in New York is down $1.30 an ounce to $1,257.30. An ounce of silver up 5 cents to $20.04. It's currently 11 and a half minutes after 9 o'clock.